Welcome to Michigan State again, because I know that you've been here several times reading before.
Thank you.
And, you know, I know that probably after a while the questions all sound the same to you, but hopefully we can get some new information from you, because I think that it becomes really important to get information that maybe you didn't have an opportunity to say before, that maybe you would like to share with students or the community members who will be hearing this in the future, maybe tomorrow.
Okay.
And do you want to start out by telling us something about yourself?
Well, I don't actually know where to begin. I guess I have all of myself in that book, and then I've got more of myself to put in other work that I'm doing. I'm still working. I'm still employed. Currently, I'm on loan from the UAW General Motors Tech Center, and I work for the UAW at the Center for Human Resources. So I am one of those who's wondering what is going to happen with Delphi and with GM, with our pensions and so on and so forth, as I'm poised to retire.
How did writing come to you, or how did you start writing?
Now that's a question I'm glad.
Why did you start writing?
Okay, you know, I'm asked that question often, and I actually started writing in the 60s. I think I started writing poems about my mother, and then I sort of wasn't writing for a while. And then I had a failed love relationship, and that always makes you want to write some poetry. But I was thinking about this actually only today, and really, I think what really made me start writing is something I didn't realize. But my mother used to read poetry to me, and she taught me to read in what would have been a third standard or a third level book that the little kids in Trinidad use for school. So I was reading Wordsworth and all this kind of stuff, and that's what I learned to read on. But all of this time, even when I began writing in the 60s or went back to it in the 70s, and even up till, just recently, it was hard for me to think of myself as a writer. I think on one level it's kind of good, because maybe I don't develop any of the conceits or the arrogance. On the other level, it seems strange to do as much writing as I do and to just think of me as myself as someone who just has to put these things down on paper. And maybe the reason for that is because I get my paycheck from General Motors, and I'm not, I don't survive as a writer. Financially, but I survive emotionally as a writer.
Right, like many writers, I mean, they really, or authors, they really don't rely on their written word for the income, unless you're
exactly,
you know, Michael, whatever,
somebody, yeah, Joyce Carol Oates or somebody like that. Yeah.
So, you grew up in Trinidad then?
No, I grew up in Detroit.
In Detroit, and growing up in Detroit, then you were bilingual.
No. Mm-hmm. Trinidad, my father was Spanish-speaking, mm-hmm. but actually the Spanish that I learned, I probably learned more from my mother, and I'm still not what I would consider fluent, mm-hmm. but I grew up learning Trini talk, so which is its own language, and my parents were really staunch.
Would it be like Spanglish?
No, it's Patois dialect.
Okay.
And and they were very staunch Trinidadians, so I learned a lot about the culture and so on from them. It wasn't until I was an adult that I actually went to Trinidad.
So you cut your teeth on English lit and then moved on from there.
Exactly.
Okay. Was it difficult to get published the first time? Who was your publisher?
My publisher is Coffee House Press. And yes, because when I first completed the collection, it actually made a little tour of New York agents, because writer friends would say, send it to my agent or send it to this agent or so on, because I went to the Vermont School of Writing to get an MFA in creative writing, and so I was getting connections to these agents. But number one, I think New York doesn't really appreciate stories. You know, bottom line, money. They want blockbuster novels. And especially from someone like me, who's like totally unknown. So my stories made a little tour of New York, and then they came back to me, and I put them in a box and shoved them in a dark corner, and they sat there for a long time, until someone came up a couple of years ago and said, why don't you send these stories to Coffee House Press? I said, yeah, I'll do that. That sounds like real good, right? And I didn't. And then they contacted me again and said, have you sent those stories? I said, no, I'll send them out. And I did. Mm-hmm. And about a year later, I got this letter that said, we're going to publish you.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, that was exciting.
How did you react to that?
I was like amazed. I called my son first. I always do this. I have a son who's in LA, stand-up comedian. So I called my son first, and I said, Pedro, I'm getting my book published. And then I called my daughter, order of seniority, you know what I mean?
Oh, right, of course.
And I called my daughter and told her. I was just ecstatic. I felt like the Velveteen Rabbit. Do you know that story? It's a children's story about the Velveteen Rabbit. That's a little boy. Has this stuffed rabbit, and he gets sick with some kind of contagious thing, and they had to quarantine him, and his only little friend was this Velveteen Rabbit. So by the time he got better, mm-hmm. and he was able to go out of quarantine, all of his clothes and this little rabbit and everything, they had to be discarded, right? So somehow the little rabbit ends up in this little wooded area, all kind of rubbed off, you know, from the little boy hugging him all the time. And then some live rabbits came around, and I guess in their exchange and everything, somehow he had served his master so well that he became a real rabbit, just like the others. So I guess I felt like I became a real writer.
So is it safe to say that you're looking for an agent then, or do you have an agent?
I don't have an agent. Coffee House is a very well-respected mid-sized press, and I don't have an agent at this point. That's all I can say. I just deal with them directly. The good side of that is that Coffee House is a very nurturing press, or they've been very nurturing to me. And your mid-sized presses, you're not making tons of money. I'm not doing like tours to Paris and all that kind of stuff. But the downside of it is that, in terms of translations, Coffee House Press has certain connects for certain languages to have your work translated into. None in Spanish, so I don't have a connect to have my work translated in Spanish. So, and that concerns me. So I don't know, you know, what'll happen.
Cadillac plant. Other stories from the Cadillac plant. Obviously, it draws from your life experiences. How much of these life experiences are going to be moved on to your other works, to your future work, other things that you write?
I think it's a worldview that's pretty much with me. When you're in the plant, people in the plant learn to observe things a lot and to analyze. You're always analyzing and rehashing things, and I think that there's a degree of that in how I write, and I'm sort of an attention to the details of my environment, which I finally figured out how to do that. Probably some of that is from just processes I learned as a skilled trades person, and so on and so forth. So currently I'm working on a collection. I'm still working on some short stories, and those stories are the collection is, the working title is Detroit Stories, so I kind of think of myself as having moved out of the factory and looking at what's going on in the city. Maybe I'm thinking of it as my adios to Detroit because, you know, when I retire, I'll probably go someplace else and live. Mm-hmm. So I still think that the intensity of the experience in the factory will stay with me in one way or the other. But it's a very interesting question that you ask because, like, the stories I'm writing now are not with people about people or about things that I necessarily live with in the same way that you live the factory.
Your book being published and that success, what was the reaction of your coworkers at not necessarily the line, but those the coworkers at the plant?
There's been an incredible amount of support from my coworkers. I think everyone says, wow, we always said we were going to write about what was going on, and finally someone wrote it, you know. So I think there's been a great deal of support, a great deal of they seem to think that the stories really reflect the life in the plant. I haven't had one worker come up and say, that didn't happen. As a matter of fact, I mean, some things that really are magical realism, people really think really happened just that way, you know. So there has been a great deal of support. And I think people have expressed to me happiness that the story is being told in the way it's been told.
Has Roger and Me affected your writing at all, the movie?
No. Actually, to be honest with you, I haven't even seen it. I don't know why I haven't seen it. I've seen others of his movies, but I haven't actually seen it. I mean, I've had my own experiences. I mean, I've been in there. I've been in the thick of the battle for all those years. I was the first woman in my trade at the Cadillac plant, and probably the fourth at Cadillac in any skilled trade, fourth woman. And so I've been in the thick of the battle. I've got my own vision, my own insights.
Who have been your biggest influences in writing? Has it been other authors, or who in particular, if anyone?
Wow, I have a slew of authors that that influence my writing style. I couldn't even point my finger on the first one. I don't even know where to start, but I'll tell you that of the U.S. authors, I would say Steinbeck, Hemingway, my mind just went blank. She just came out with a book, too. V.S. Naipaul, Robert Antoni. There's just a whole, Jamaica Kincaid, Isabella Allende, there's just so many. And I think I tend towards the writers who are Latin or Caribbean too, because there's a certain Salman Rushdie. Well, I'll tell you one thing about Salman Rushdie and the Satanic Verses. I think that I have a goal set for myself to open a novel that had that kind of, I thought that was just sheer magic, the opening of that novel. It's just like, it just took my breath away. It's just like you had the two main characters just falling out of that plane. It's just not having an opening like that, but just having that sense that just, I can't even explain it. That has set a personal goal for me in terms of how to open a novel, and I'll get there someday, I hope.
At home, on your bedside table, if you have a bedside table, what book is there?
Oh my God, I've got a mountains of books on the floor. I'm just in the process of reading Orhan Pamuk. I think that's how to pronounce it, Snow. Okay. And that's an incredibly thick book about life in Turkey and so on. I'm reading that right now.
Well, our time is up. Thank you very much, and we'll hear you read some of your material.
Okay.
Your presentation.
Thank you. I hope I didn't ramble too much.
Oh, no. That's wonderful. Thanks.